At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
What's going on, y'all? Welcome back to another episode of Knowing is Knowing. I'm your host, Rashad Young, and as always, I appreciate you guys tuning in. Today's guest, I had Barton Quickly, who was a burnout coach. And, you know, when I first discovered that he was a burnout coach, man, like, what all can you learn about burnout coaches? And the conversation was just so seamless, man. It flowed together so well. And we discussed aligning with things that you love, which a lot of people struggle with burnout. Also, a lot of the emotional struggles that men deal with in regards to expressing themselves and unpacking some of the emotional things that lead to burnout. So if you're struggling with burnout, if you know somebody who's struggling with burnout, this episode is for you. Again, Barton, thank you so much for joining. His information will be in the episode description. And as always, make sure to subscribe to the podcast and your favorite audio platform. Appreciate you guys. Peace.
Barton, thank you so much for joining. I'm super excited to have this conversation with you, man. The first question that I ask all my guests is, who are you to the world?
In what format? As a friend, family member, what I do for a living?
Friend, family member. Like, how would you describe yourself?
I'm somebody who cares deeply about deep relationships. So I really value those with my family. I'm able to be there and support people. I'm somebody that a lot of my close friends lean on, that have questions for. They always want to pick my brain because I do a lot of introspection. I do a lot of reading, a lot of studying. I'm a student for life. So yeah, so I that's something I would say that people would say about me.
Student for life. And so an avid reader that you mentioned, what are some favorite books that have kind of been like your, I would say, I guess, a time mark to describe who you are?
Top three are Essentialism, Art of Possibility, and Awareness. Essentialism is by Greg McKeown. It's the disciplined art of doing less. Okay. As a lifelong people pleaser, that was a book that helped me start to draw boundaries and say no. I mean, I love that book so much, I actually made a big giant golden no that it sits in our living room. And then on top of it, there's a little tiny diamond yes. Art of Possibility is another book. And each of these books that I've talked about, I've gone through in audio or print format at least 15 times, bookmarked the heck out of them, and just really study what these principles are. Art of Possibility is, if I had to sum it up, they start off saying, look, it's all invented. So invent what works for you. And there's just a lot of pearls of wisdom, and the book builds upon itself. But it's just, it really changed how I look at, you know, everything is a construct. And so what can I build that works for me? And then Awareness is by Anthony DeMello. He passed away in 87, Indian Jesuit priest. And he just basically talks about, you don't have to change. You don't have to do all these other things. If you just bring real intense awareness to what is, you will start to see the truth about yourself and about life around you.
I like those topics. I like the books. I think that's really cool. So would you consider yourself always been an introspective guy, or is that something that just kind of you recognize as life went on? Like there was like a moment where you was like, you know, life has a deeper connection. Cause I'm always intrigued on these conversations. Like when does an individual have that deeper seeking, mentality?
I would say for me, it started in high school. I was a little bit of a reckless kid. And wasn't really sure what, you know, I was doing in life. And my friend got him, his dad made him go to this all boys retreat, right? We went to a Catholic school, so it had a religious overtone. And we were supposed to hang out that weekend. And I said, oh man, that sucks. I'll tell you what, I'll come with you and we'll just raise hell. We'll just do all the naughty things while we're there. We'll sneak out, you know? And man, I went there and it wasn't like dogma or like here's this rigid thing. It was really just about getting young men to open up And I took to it like a fish to water. I mean, to the point where at the closing ceremony, I'm up giving this very heartfelt speech and my body's looking at me like, man, what happened to like raising hell? I don't get it. So that was a big part. You know, I'm 51, so I was in the rave scene in the 90s, having very just deep spiritual conversation about rhythm and music and deeper meanings in life. And that planted the seed. But what really kicked it into high gear was when I left the corporate world, 13 years. And at the end, it was rough. It was just hardcore panic attacks and serious anxiety.
Oh,
wow. Left to become this. I was living in San Francisco at the time. I left to become a dog walker, which is a thing. Like you can make,
<It is.
laughs> you can make really, really good money. And when I found that out, I was on like, sign me up. But there was a 6-month honeymoon, you know, where I wasn't working like crazy hours in the corporate world, where I had no anxiety. And then 6 months later, here it comes back. And I learned a very valuable lesson. You can change the scenery, but there you are. So that's when I became that I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not going to live the rest of my life like this. So hired a therapist, hired a coach, and then used all my drive time driving around the city to just, I'm like, I have like 3 hours of drive time, audiobooks and podcasts. And I've never let up from that since. And this was January 2017 when I committed to the path.
Wow. That's kind of, yeah, similar timeline for me. I'm trying to think. Before I go on to that part, so you said San Francisco. Are you from San Francisco, like born and raised?
Or is that no, part of you? I was born in Virginia, raised outside of D.C.,
okay.
And then graduated in 97, went out to San Francisco, was dating a girl at the time, and she goes home for the summer. She was still going to school in Georgetown, so I bounced out there for the summer. I didn't know what I was going to do. I was like, hey, I'll get a room for rent. Check out the city, fell in love. 2 years later, moved back. And then, so that relationship ended. But then I met my bride to be like 4 months later after I moved back there. And we were just like, hey, we're just going to lay roots here. And we hung out for like 24 years.
Oh, wow.
Before moving. So now I live in Central Virginia, which we can get into that
back,
story.
So you're back in Virginia.
Yeah, we're in this. I've never been where I'm in Central Virginia. Small town called Lynchburg, and we can get into that if you want, but people always ask me like,
yeah, let's do it. Where is that nearby? I've heard of it before.
It's about an hour from Charlottesville.
Is it near any major? Okay.
So an hour from Charlottesville, 2 hours from Richmond, Virginia, 3 hours from DC, but yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, so yeah, that that was another one of those major life upheaval transitions. Amy and I had done a bunch of soul searching starting several years ago, but like, okay, I think we're done with San Francisco. What's next? And we kept feeling called to a smaller town, a smaller community. Really wanted to jump into community because San Francisco is 800,000 people plus the tourists in a 7 square mile. I mean, you're just packed. And just wanted to get in and know our neighbors and like, you know, do things to support the community. So when we said, all right, let's do it, I said, well, let's create a vision board. I mean, I use vision boards for myself, for my coaching clients. They're such powerful tools. And I say the rule is we have a magic genie. We won the lottery. You got to remove all restrictions and just shoot for the moon. So we did. We knew we wanted lake access. So we printed a picture of a house on a lake, put it on a poster board. I actually have it sitting over there. And then we use post-it notes and call out, like, what's an attribute? What do you want? Temperate climate, access to local healthy farms, closer to family. And on down we went. But Rashad, it was crazy because there wasn't one note that the other person went, I don't know about that. Like, we were in lockstep.
Wow, so, yeah.
So then we organize it. And I said, all right, well, we got to make three rings. Deal breaker, almost deal breaker, and then cherry on top. So we did that and used that as our filter to hunt for the next place versus doing searches for like, you know, what would be a great small town? I mean, we did, but we had to get the filter in place first.
I'm intrigued by vision boards. I'll be honest with you. I don't know if I have fully committed to them. Like I think I have made some and I'm just like, oh, okay. Like some of it kind of kind of stick with it. What do you think vision boards do, like, for your perspective? How do you think they really make an impact on one's life?
So you have the reticular activating system in your brain, which is in charge of filtering out most things, because our brains could not possibly handle all of the information that is around us. So it's you know, it's our brain's main job is to keep us alive, and everything else is secondary. But you can also use the same system, then train it to focus on what is most important. So by creating the vision board, and if you can use, you don't have to use images. I've done it both ways, words and images, but it's just the daily commitment to the information. And this is backed by neuroscience. Like, this isn't woo-woo nonsense. Because I learned about that term from Dr. Doty, who was on the Mel Robbins podcast. And he would say, it's almost like a mantra. You know, you say this thing over and over and over again, and you're building in attention to your brain. But the key for the vision board is that you have to have it out and you have to look at it every day. And I would add another layer, which I've developed through doing coaching workshop, vision board workshops, is look at the image, but then imagine it is in the past. Like, this is a memory. You've already done this. And then it ingrains deeper into your unconscious. And all of a sudden you start connecting things. It's almost like, I'd really like to have a red bicycle. Well, then you start to see red bicycles everywhere. Your brain has now said, oh, okay, this is important. This is what we're doing. Got it.
Yeah. So it's kind of like the law of assumption, since you have to assume that you have that particular thing.
Sure.
And match the frequency with maybe a thought or feeling. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Especially if you can do things like, whenever you're going to look at your vision board, you have a song that you can listen to many times over that, like, just get you up, and you're looking at it. But I mean, this is like, you know, you look at athletes, they do this kind of stuff all the time. They do visualization, but it's now, I find the vision boards to be better than just doing pure visualization, because you now have a physical, tangible image for your brain to lock in on.
That's a different perspective. I never really considered that. I believe in them. I believe that, you know, we have the ability to do a lot of things if we put our mind to it, but that aspect, I never really fully gave its due. So I think that makes sense. I know you mentioned coaching. We'll work with clients. One, I guess the first question is, what type of coaching do you do? And what is usually the most, what is the typical presenting problem deal with when navigating with clients?
I'm going to ask you to repeat the second question, but the first one is, I'm a lifestyle business coach, which in short means I help people align what they do with what they love, but who I really feel called to help are dreamers and seekers who want much more out of life, and they want to make an impact in the world, big or small. That's who I'm all about. So what's the second question you had about a problem that the clients bring?
What is traditionally the typical problem that you feel that a lot of your clients are typically coming in with? Or thing that they need the most help with, or maybe the biggest question that they typically ask you?
Honestly, they come in and they feel like they're out of alignment. They feel like they're living somebody else's life, doing what other people want them to, and they're not really sure. They know there's something, they're like, I'm off. I know there's something more that I want, but I don't know what it is. And then, I mean, it spirals into all kinds of other ways of addressing how they live their life, because there's a great quote from Dan Sullivan that says, how you do one thing is how you do all things, right? So people kind of compartmentalize, this is work me, this is social me, family me. And what I try and help them do is bring alignment in, like, how can you have the true you be weaving through all these areas of your life? But yeah, stuck, overwhelmed, they don't feel like they have full agency of what they're doing in their life.
I feel like that's definitely common. How do you think people get unstuck? I feel like that's a very common theme that a lot of people talk about. They feel like stuck in their careers, stuck in a relationship, hitting that true stride that they believe they can hit.
Well, you got to get very clear on what it is that you want, right? I saw in your book that you have out on Amazon. I have not purchased it, but I went and looked at the description, and you talk about passions. Right. So the formula is, who's the true authentic you? How can you start living that and expressing that? What are your deepest passions? Not the pretty good. I mean, the holy cow, I would pay somebody to be able to do that. Or, you know, just things that like light you up. And then what are your superpowers? Again, I feel like I'm just quoting your book back to you, but what are your innate, God-given, universe-given talents, that things that come easier to you than other people? Okay, well, now you've got like an incredible trifecta there. And so now what's some larger cause you would like to do? And I don't mean it's like save the whales. I mean, just something that is more than just your daily life. If we can get all that into a hopper, now it's going to help you get unstuck. And it's that bigger purpose that's really going to do it, because, you know, it's sort of like when a natural disaster happens and people swing into action and they get out there and they lift the car off the person, right? I mean, superhuman stuff. It's because you're doing something that's way more important than just our little life.
Yeah. That's a fair point. I think the other point I'm always interested to talk to, especially coaches, about is, I think, the motivational piece. I think a lot of people, it's kind of similar to being stuck. It's like, you know, they don't feel that they have the ability to do something because they're not intrinsically motivated. From your perspective, do you think — I'm a firm believer that motivation matters to an extent, but I also don't think that's the only way you can do something to be successful. From your perspective, what is your view on motivation itself in, I guess, ties to success?
Motivation, I mean, again, it really is finding that thing that if you really thought about and visualized yourself doing that, you just physically feel like charged and lit up. And how can we capture that and help you remember that? Again, back to a vision board, back to a mantra. But I use a tool for creating what I call momentum, right? So motivation is great, but you need momentum. And that's what people get stuck at. They have this wonderful idea and it's a dopamine hit. And then all of a sudden, bah, 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 right, that fades. Being able to track your momentum heading towards something is important. You know, you can do tracking lists and things like that. But what I like to do, and I do it for myself, is I have people sit down and I'm like, just 10 minutes, I want you to write down instances in your life where you adapted, or overcame, right? And if you're honest, you're going to need more than 10 minutes, unless you're, you know, 10, right? So now you have this whole list. Those are facts. Your mind can't argue with facts. And so it's showing yourself, look what I have already done. Well, if you've already done those things, goodness, why couldn't you do these other things that you're starting to get the scaries about? So I call it, you know,
so it's like your expanding your mind.
Well, it's just reminding yourself, because our minds catalog what's known and safe, and they just put it in a file drawer and shut it. It's focused on the next, what's wrong, what's the gap, what's missing. So by constantly going back to your hall of fame, you're just like, okay, look, I have this ability. And then, yeah, like I said, the other piece is, well, what's the bigger goal? And how are you tracking your actions toward closing that gap? Because it's good to reflect on that. I do a three wins for every day in my journal. And I can look back and think, like, I didn't get my big project done today, but look at the steps that I did take towards it.
So you're an avid journaler too.
Yeah, I posted a picture. I don't know. I think you liked it. There was two pictures in the carousel. One is a picture of me leaning forward.
Yeah.
And the second picture was a stack of the journals. Well, that's part of it. It's probably about that big. I've been doing it since I was 27. But yeah, it's daily.
Every day.
Oh yeah.
Wow.
That's been hard for me. What's that? Hard.
So that's been hard. That's the one thing I've always I guess for context, like I'm finishing up to be a licensed therapist. There's some steps. So when I talk to my clients, you know, I'm like, oh yeah, you should practice journaling. And then I'm like, I don't even use that myself. I think it's hard for me to sit and write it consistently. And I guess maybe that's something that these conversations are a reminder that they're just choices that I'm making. Sure. Maybe there's something I'm avoiding in regards to learning that. I think, you know, and based off of what I've heard, when people really do journal, it is really impactful in people's lives when they do it consistently, because you're kind of seeing Yeah, you're seeing your own growth in a sense, like what you thought in the, May of 25 versus what 2026 may look like. I'm always very impressed to hear like people's stories behind that. So that makes sense, but it's a long time.
Well, there's a million ways to do it, and I'm going to be putting together a workshop on journaling 101, because people always ask, how do you do it? And I'm like, there's our techniques, but at the core principle of it, all you're doing is writing down what has your attention. That's it. Doesn't have to be fancy. You don't have to come up with some format. Like I said, there are other ways to do it, but no, I mean, it's my morning routine is get up, take the dog out, feed the pets, put on coffee, do yoga, sit down, have my coffee, do my journaling, and then I meditate. And I do it in that order because sometimes I have a very busy brain in general. But I'm like, I need to get these thoughts out. So then when I meditate, I can have much more of that sort of being silent and present.
Is there a certain meditation that you do, or is it just kind of you have the same routine, like 10 minutes, 15 minutes? Some people do priming, which I heard is pretty big. I know that came from, I think that came from Tony. I don't know if it came from Tony Robbins, but Tony Robbins made it relatively significant in that space based off what I've at least seen and heard.
I've never heard of that. No,
You know what
I
priming is?
no, what is it?
Priming is like an intense breathing exercise. I think you like breathe really hard for like 10 seconds and you like reach, you like have your hands up and down. I can send you a video after this, but it's a mix of meditation. It's like visualization. I think it's like people who do got those active brains to do some sort of movement, and then when you are still for a second, you're supposed to feel just euphoric thing at some point. I did it a long time ago, and the one time I did it, I did feel like this real euphoric rushing sensation. I don't know if I just also was just having a bad morning, so maybe that helped. But at that moment of time, it did something to me. I know some people do breath work as well. Do you follow Wim Hof by chance? Yeah, that's a crazy guy.
Oh, he is
But
nuts. But you talk about what an example of, and I love the story about when scientists hooked him up to like monitors and they did things like submerge him in the ice bath. And then he's using his mind to heat his body up to where it melted the water. And they're like, you're a freak. And he's like, no, I can teach this to anybody. And over the course of a
yeah.
weekend, taught a group of people and they hooked him up and they were able to do it too.
That's crazy.
But the,
Let you know how powerful your mind is, though.
what's that? Oh,
No, I'm
yeah.
saying, yeah.
I mean, it's like it's probably one of the oldest cliches, like we use maximum 10% of our brain power. So that to me is the next frontier, and you're seeing such a collective awakening around the world where people are learning how to tap in their minds. Have you heard of Dr. Joe Dispenza?
Yes.
So he,
Supernatural.
yeah, it's a great
Supernatural.
book. When he leads those retreats where he gets people into heart coherence, and it's great because he's not telling you what happens. He shows you the data of people, walking in with like stage four pancreatic cancer and then walking out and they're cancer free, or they're paralyzed and able to walk, walking out, and it's, this is just, he's like, I'm not making this up. This is data. So again, another example of how the mind can do so much for the body, good or bad. But you asked what type of meditation. I want to come back to that. Actually, let me come back to that Tony Robbins thing, because he said something that I use now, which he talks about what your physical state is going to affect your mental state. So if you're facing something challenging and you're worried, but you're very still, your minds are going to kind of ruminate and kind of swirl down the drain. But if you get up and do like 20, 30, 40 jumping jacks and like listen to some pump up tunes, and then now sit down with your problem, you're going to feel like you're in a better state. And so I've definitely used that technique for big life questions.
Speaking of big life questions, what is something you would have told your younger self now, knowing all that you know now?
Well, I mean, on a very deep level, I would say you're not broken. There is nothing wrong with you. You are not too much. You are not weird. Other people just aren't enough for you. Because I've always been just an out there person, and I've edited myself for far too much of my life and wasn't being true and authentic. Again, why that's such a pillar of what I talk about in coaching. And there's a guy, and I've come a long way. I mean, that's what kind of sort of leads to people pleasing, hiding part of myself, because I'm like, oh, I don't know. People get all weirded out when I do that. And it's not like I'm like, you know, running around naked or anything like that. But it's just, Case Kenny wrote a book called That's Bold of You. I don't know if you've heard of him.
Yeah, I've heard the book.
Yeah. And I finished the book, and it's just a great job, because I mean, essentially, he just keeps coming back to it, that life book. When people say you're too much, they just aren't enough for you. There's no, you like, just lean into your authenticity and express that and be that, versus, you know, like a sort of jumping around. But I heard in Essentialism, Greg McKeown talks about an Australian nurse named Bronnie Ware. She was a hospice nurse. And for 15 years, she recorded people's end of life regrets. The number one, hands down, I wished I lived a life truer to myself other than what others expected of me. I mean, that's hardcore, man. End of your life, you're sitting there going, damn, I blew it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I think about that often. My grandmother, when I was 9, she passed. And I remember the one thing that she asked for from my grandfather at the time that was still alive was that she wanted a dining room table, and she never got it. And that story never, that was the only thing she was mad about. And all these years, all I wanted was a dining room table. And it made me think of, and for some odd reason, I don't know why that story stuck with me, but that stuck with me since I was 9 years old. Cause it was so profound. You think of like all these things, like people wish they would have done, like, I wish I would have ran a marathon. You know, I wish I would have got married. I wish I would have had kids. It could be as simple as just having something that we desire as an item, that just really just, you know. So yeah, I think it is the true part of living your life to the fullest. You did mention people pleasing, and I feel like that I was once a part of the people pleasing committee at one point myself. How did you get out of that space?
Well, like I said, that book Essentialism had just such a profound impact on me. I mean, another thing I would say, like, if somebody's like, just wrap it up in one sentence. The quote is, if you don't prioritize your life, somebody else will. And then I started realizing how I'm letting other people prioritize my life. And so he's got a whole chapter on just basically saying no. Like, you know, this is something that, I know, like, a lot of, like, my female friends, they always feel like they have to say no, and then a whole bunch of other things. And then, so, like, Brene Brown will say, no is a complete sentence. So
it is.
I started learning to do that. So when I was in the dog world, right, running my own business, I was still kind of doing the people pleasing, even though I was like, well, hold on, now I'm running my own business. Can I do things differently? But sort of scarcity mindset. If I say no, am I going to lose a client? Am I not going to have a successful business? But I just started finding ways that I was like, you know, I really don't want to do this. And I would just say, no, sorry, that's not in my service. And I just started building up a muscle memory for just saying no. Now, that became difficult when it came down to family, but I still committed to starting to set those boundaries. You know, one thing he said, sorry, and we'll get back to boundaries, but he kind of has had to go through like a thought experiment. What's the best that can happen? What's the worst that can happen if I say no? Our mind defaults to the negative, right? So, oh, this could probably happen and blah, blah, blah. Well, what's the best that could happen? Well, if I said no, I'd actually have more time back in my day to do the things that I want.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Yeah. That's a fair point.
Well, how did you come out of it?
Oh, that might be another episode itself. I think what got me out of it, if I'm being honest, I got to a point. I got not physically stabbed. I'm gonna make that clear. I got stabbed by so many people that were close to me. And I realized the lengths that I was going for people. And I think it was one stabbing in particular that was just kind of like, all right, I got it. It makes sense. And I think by nature, I learned that my reasoning for people pleasing was, I think you kind of mentioned, just like wanted to feel accepted. Like for so long, I felt I was told how great I was and how great I am. And I think more so this is in the space of like intimate relationships. I was always told like how much of an amazing guy I was, but not their amazing guy. And I remember I used to go to like great lengths to, I feel like I had to show myself. And I think one situation just really did it for me. And I was just kind of like, my best offering, I feel like, is 98% of people's I wish I would have had moments. And so you just got to hopefully find that 98% crowd. So yeah, I think it was just several moments of betrayal. And I think that was it. It doesn't change who I am, because I still lead with my heart. And if I feel like I trust you, I give you everything. I just learned it now. It's like, yeah, I mean, I'd be able to talk on the phone at this exact moment. Like, I still stay to my principles and values, but if I don't want to talk on the phone or do something, I will gladly say no or not at this time. Or I need a moment. I think that's my number one. Like, I need to decompress for a second, but I'll call you in a second. Because I think that's the thing that I learned I wasn't really doing well with was, people would place boundaries on me. But I wouldn't necessarily place boundaries on them, because I felt like if I did that, then they would act weird towards me. And then when I started doing that, you know, I realized that people just only using me for what I was doing for them versus who I was. So I think that's how I learned. Best way I could put it.
Yeah, well, I mean, in the words of Anthony DeMello, just awareness. Just really paying attention to and pausing for a minute and thinking about things. You know, some people just, they're like a locomotive going down the train track of life. But, you know, people like you and me who pause and think for a minute, you're both, that's half the battle. Now you're seeing it, and then you're able to sit there and go, well, hold on. How are my needs being met? How do I want to be treated? How do I want people to show up for me? But I was always the person bending over backwards to show up for other people. And then I'm like, well, darn it. You know what? My tank is empty because I've given everything. Who's going to help refill my tank? But I realized I was also making a choice in that matter. I was surrounding myself with people that I was helping that weren't helping me. And then started to create alignment with, no, where's that reciprocation?
Yeah. And I think the biggest thing I learned is that what I ask for in reciprocation really isn't much at all. It's just, you know, being in the same, at least in the same realm as me. I've also learned that, you know, for me to try to place my own standards on how I am with somebody versus how they'll be with me is very unrealistic. I know mm-hmm. I'm going to show up. It won't necessarily be the same for somebody else. And so I think that's the biggest thing I had to learn, is that I can't expect myself out of somebody else for various reasons. But more importantly, I learned just from that constant disappointment. Then I have a mentor. He's a 73-year-old retired doctor who's Buddhist, and he cussed me out very fruitfully. In a way where he was just telling me in a kind way, like, you are so nice, you with such good intention, but half the world, well, he said 98% of the world is not going to act like you. So you don't have to change who you are, but you have to start accepting the fact that people are not going to be you. Quit being so nice and quit being so bleeping. Accommodating, and that one sat with me too, because that was the first time he cussed at me. But it stuck though, because I knew what he meant, because he was saying I used to be like that, and after having so many, after dealing with so much disappointment, and wanting somebody to be what you want them to be, you know, you learn how to shrug your shoulders. So yeah, I think a lot of people pleasers. I just don't think everybody has their awareness on why they are. A lot of mine was, like most people, I think, is a sense of worth, sense of self-worth, I think. Self-worth and acceptance.
Well, you know, another piece that came along on my journey that profoundly changed my life for the better forever, which also does tie into the people pleasing. And it's a pillar of what I teach. One of the first things I want to talk about when we're coaching. And it's the topic of self-love. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean like, you know, like, oh, look at me, you know, I'm so great and like whatever else. I'm talking about like you would love a friend, like your best friend, even that same kind of compassion. So I was listening to a podcast and Amal Ravikant was on. He's the author of Love Yourself Like Your Life Depends Upon It. And he talked about being suicidal because his marriage had crumbled, his businesses had crumbled, he was in super debt. And he was like, that's it, I'm out. And he knew his buddy had a gun and he was trying to figure out how to get a hold of it. And then it was just delay, delay. And then finally he said, you know, there's got to be another way. So that's when I realized, well, I don't love myself. And Rashad, I had to pull over and ugly cry hard for like 5 minutes because I was like, damn, I don't. So this is like, you know, I got van full of dogs and I compose myself and I'm like, all right, we're gonna get on that. I'm gonna get on that. And I start driving along. And then he said he hit a plateau. Like he was doing things like saying, I love myself to himself in the mirror. He'd write it in his journal. He was just doing acts of kindness towards himself. And he said, but I hit a plateau. I was like, well, why isn't this going further? And he goes, I realize I've never forgiven myself. Man, boom, pull over again, ugly car hard for another 5 minutes. I was like, dude, I definitely don't forgive myself. And so he's got a practice that I've used, and with every client and myself personally, and anybody else who just wants to use this, it is so powerful. So he wrote down on sheets of paper all the things that he had not forgiven himself for. Now, if he caught something that was he never tried to make amends, he never apologized, he went and did the work. So then he came back, and it wasn't about getting the if that's okay, it was making the effort, right? So then he came back, grabbed those sheets of paper, read every one out loud, and said, I love myself and I forgive myself. And then he lit it on fire. And he said, it's just never come back. Or if it does, it's a whisper of the demon it used to be. And I looked into this because I was like, all right, first of all, I did it. And I'm like, son of a gun, it does work. Why is this working? Because you're taking thoughts that keep repeating in your head over and over again, even if it's not on a daily basis. You're writing them down on paper. So you're taking a thought. It's kind of like smoke. You're putting it in physical form right in front of you. Your mind sees, oh, you captured that. Okay, I can stop repeating that. And then when you burn it, your mind is now seeing those words literally disappear. Now, when I do this homework assignment, women coaching clients, boom, right away, they're super onto it. They'll do. Guys are always like, man, that sounds stupid. You know, I don't believe you. And then they go and do it and they come back and go, damn, dude, you're right. Like that felt like this incredible weight lifted. I even had a guy videotape himself doing the burning ceremony and just him seeing, like, he's like, I was doing this to kind of show you that it doesn't work, but you see him like crying. Like he's like, wow, yeah. But if you don't love yourself, like RuPaul says, how are you going to love anybody else? Right. So your deepest needs, the things that you want from other people, right? Like your teacher said, don't put those expectations on them. Do it for yourself. Show up for yourself.
That's you got me thinking about the thing about writing stuff. So I'm actually, I guess, for context, I'm actually finishing up a poetry book right now. Kind of something similar to that in a sense, where it's more centered around my intimate relationships, but it's also really self-reflective. So I think when people want to share that, sometimes I think people think I'm like bashing everybody I date, and that's not really the case at all. It's just really expressing my experiences with these people and what I kind of learned from each and every one of them. And I kind of feel like I'm doing that in a sense too, because it's been very hard to reread them, because there's a lot of emotions that kind of sit with that. So many questions, and as I keep rereading, I'm trying to rewrite them, and I'm like, is there more? Should I say that? Is there more? Should I, you know? Because I remember I was telling my mom about this, and she's like, why are you doing that? I was like, I think for somebody like me, I usually am a guy that takes a lot of punches in the chin. I just keep taking the punch, and I just keep moving. I just keep moving. And I talked to my therapist, and she was like, you know, you got a bag of rocks. You're just kind of like carrying with you. You have to do something about those rocks. And so I think that's what kind of led me to that, because I had to really think about all these things and people that I feel like have played a role, especially like as I'm in my 30s now, but like really shaped my viewpoint on a lot of things. But more important, not only forgive myself, but forgive them. but also like maybe something that's lingering to write that out. So I was talking to my boys about it last night. We were putting some stuff together, and they was hearing me read some of the pieces. Like, I know you felt this way about things. I'm like, well, you know, when you sit around for something for so long, you actually start thinking about these things that really bother you, and you have like that self-actualization of like, I didn't really love myself in this space. You learn a lot. You know, some of those pieces are still hard to like reread again because the rawness is still there. So no, I get it. I definitely you've given me a couple tips. I think I would like to try. But it is always funny though when a guy does hear like something emotionally opening, like, oh, that won't work, and everyone that ends up working. Because I think, you know, especially as men, we can do better with that as far as expressing ourselves. So I'm a big advocate for that. So I'm glad to see you doing the work. At least trying to get other people to do that as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're hitting the nail on the head. It's like, what's causing the most disruption in the world right now? It's emotionally unintelligent men. You know, and it's just something that we're not taught, we're not born with. Women are able to process emotions, you know, and it's, you know, it's like we build up the emotions as like this big scary monster, and it's like, you know, in the closet, and it's like, no, man, do you know how simple it is? You open up the door and you turn on the light. It's just your coat. But until you go face to face with it, it's this lurking thing, and it blooms larger and larger and larger in your mind. And so, you know, trying to dispel these things like real men don't cry. It's like, well, real emotionally, mentally healthy men do, because they get it out. You don't hang on to that, man. You're just burying all these weeds, and it will explode out of you one day, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, no, that's a battle, man. Like I said, I've always considered myself emotional, but I also think that I have used logic as a defense mechanism. I try to like logic way into like, oh, that happened because of that, and you know, that's not also healthy. But I, you know, I think again, as you mentioned a lot in this, and I have one more question for you.
Sure.
I think it's important, and that's my favorite question: is it what does it mean to be human to you?
Well, I mean, there's two sides of that coin, right? You got sort of your person who's just kind of the in the sort of animal form, right? We're going by the hard wiring that, you know, our 2-million-year-old brain, and you know, we're here to survive and procreate and, you know, spread the human force. But the other side of the coin is what you're seeing more and more of these days, and it's people who are stepping into awareness of who they are. And I believe that, you know, evolution from an outside in perspective has already done its thing. We're not physically going to evolve anymore due to the environment. Now the next step of evolution is from the inside out. And it starts with the mind and being able to harness that and be able to process emotions, thoughts, be more intentional about what you're doing, and truly being authentic and letting others be authentic as well is the next piece. So that's what I would say what we're going through right now is a transition. So that's what I would say being human is.
I like that answer, man. And I appreciate you taking the time for this great conversation. Seriously, like this is definitely one I feel like that I always need. For those who can find you on social media, where can they find you?
I hang out on Instagram at Barton Quigley. LinkedIn, same name as well. And then of course, my website, bartonquigley.com, where you can find links to my podcast, Small Town Secret Sauce. And then I also do a weekly newsletter called Wednesday Wisdom, where I share quotes that I'm pondering, that I'm working through and applying to my own personal growth.
I like that. I love that. So for those who are listening and who will be listening, make sure to check out his stuff. It will be in the episode description. As always, make sure to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite audio platform, and always continue to support one another. This is always great. The power of social media is real. I didn't know Barton a day before this. Obviously, new through social media, but it's always beauty to have these conversations, because I do think that that's the whole point of the human experience, is to connect, to understand, and to grow. You just never know where these conversations lead. So for those listening, again, thank you again. This has been another episode of Knowing is Knowing. Until next time.